Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Welcome to this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. Sam Lee and Paul Byas are here with me. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
In person.
In person, I'm Paul.
Yeah, in person. First time in person, I think that it's the three of us, right?
Three of us, yeah. Me and Sam, for us two, it's like 3 years, 2 years. Okay. I don't know.
Well, the last time we did it was walking back from the Villa game, last game of the season, to the car park.
Was it?
In the rain.
Just to be like, for like 10 minutes, what the hell did you make of that? I was like, I've literally no idea. That was the maddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Halcyon days. You can read everything on City and more in The Athletic right now for £1 a month for 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/mancitypod and sign up. You get these podcasts without the ads as well, so just sign up at theathletic.com/mancitypod. We're recording this in person because we are straight after Pep Guardiola's pre-match press conference. So let's start by hearing what the manager had to say ahead of this weekend's Manchester derby.
Always expect in front of the opponents we're going to face, always expect the best. The quality they have is no doubt about that for many years. And they come with a very good results, a tough side, because winning in Southampton was not easy, but especially Liverpool and Arsenal home. So, good momentum for them.
Your physio, Mario Pafundi, joined the Norwegian national team the last 2 weeks to take care of Erling. Can you tell us more about the background for that decision? Because it's a bit rare to see someone working with both a club and the national team.
No, it's not weird. When it's an event like European Cups or World Cups, many physios go with the players. Not for the case of Mario, that's an exceptional physio. So, always I said to the club, the most important department in the backroom staff, everyone is important, but especially the most important one is the physios. They take care of the legs. And Erling last season struggled a lot in Dortmund because he was mostly all year injured, and arrived here with a little bit problems after a small surgery in summertime. And I started to work with Mario, with Federico, with other guys, and thanks to them, of course, his work ethic and the rest, and he can play regularly. Well, last season was not possible. It is thank you for the, of course, Erling to it, but the hands and the treatments of the guys. So the clubs earn a lot of money when the players can play, and most of the time it's thanks to the physios. So that's why, like, Mario Erling knows each other and asked him to go to national team, and they did it.
He was very thankful of the club because he said thanks because the club has basically made him be able to play many more games than he used to do. He's played every game this season. He played two times 90 minutes this international break. Do you have any thoughts on what the issue was or what you've done differently than?
No, you have to ask to Mario. I'm not physio. I don't know what they do. What they do is try to make the players available, and not just Mario, all of them. So it's so important the way they work. We have an incredible talent, guys, and that's what helped the players to be fit. Otherwise, they could not play, and it would be not sense.
Pep, If I'm not mistaken, you're going to have to play 13 matches in the next 43 days.
Everyone is going to do this.
Everyone, yeah.
Not
yeah.
everybody know, but the guys European. Who are European, yeah.
So that's pretty much a match every 3 days. In that same period, how many proper training sessions, tactical sessions, you think you're going to be able to have?
Few. If recovery, be ready, try to rotate as much as possible the players, everybody involved, everybody's going to play the next games, everyone is in both minutes, someone more than the other ones, but everyone is going to play.
You said few sessions, so how does that change the impact of a manager in that period?
Since I am manager, I was a bit like that 11, 12 years ago, start, never see this game, so it's not a surprise, it's not news. So adapt, adjust, recover well, physios, ice, and in the legs, and train specific what you need, what you believe you have to improve for a few times.
Hi, Pep. On the game itself, you've had a fair few Manchester derbies now. How does it compare to previous games at Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern versus Dortmund? How does the Manchester derby specifically compare? How is it different? What makes it special?
In Spain, Barcelona, Madrid, Madrid, Barcelona, more noisy. The days before, the day after is more media, more everything. The rest in Germany here, perfect. You can work, people expecting, enjoy to watch the derby, and that's all.
And is it different for you as a manager, this game, this fixture? Do you feel different?
Not much. Yeah, of course it's important. It's a derby of the big rival in the city, and but try to figure out what they're going to do, what we can do to beat them. So no more than that. And in these kind of games, you don't have to make an extra motion or extra, because it's what it is. Everybody knows it. The stadium will be full, and they will support us behind us. And of course, they know we're going to do our best. I'm looking forward anyway.
And finally, with John Stones out, I guess that means there's probably a role for Akanji on Sunday. How impressed have you been with him? Are you surprised at how quickly he's adapted to life in the Premier League with City?
I played really well since arrived. We cannot deny that. He has all the skills that we need. And especially professional, a serious, intelligent person. So he's well prepared here. And it's another option that we have, and for this is a long, long season.
I know you said John Stones will be back when he's back, but does it look like a long-term injury? Is it a short-term?
No, I think it will not be 4, 5, 6 weeks. It will be less. Yeah. So normally, hamstring can be between 4, 6 weeks. I don't know. I said to Melissa, I don't know when I'm going to come back, but he's going back, but I think maybe 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks, hopefully.
And in terms of Emmerich, is he available to start, do you think, this weekend, or will the derby come a little bit too? Emmerich, Laporte, do you think?
A long time, he's injured. But the important is what we're seeing in the training session. He's moving well, and his ability with the pass is exceptional. So, yeah, it's important to come back for this crazy schedule like everybody has. Have another player, it's so important. And for him as well, to come back.
Kevin De Bruyne has said that for a lot of people in football, it's about negativity and fear. But playing under you, it's about extreme positivity. What do you say to players before big games like this one?
Nothing. This big game, few. There is a plan for the way they attack, for the way they defend. You have to adjust. And that's all. And always I believe this is a big opportunity, our job, football, to express our or the skills the players they have in front of the 1,000 million people, and we have to do it for them. And the best way is to be yourself and try to what you are as a football player, show every day as much as possible. Don't be a scare. Be up front and try to, play good. And if you do it, the consequences will be points, and victories. So I prefer to be active than reactive, and and the teams always have been. I've been as a football player and especially as a manager, always have been like this and always will be like that.
Last season in the Champions League knockouts, you brought Kyle and John back from injuries. You said it was worth the risk to play them. Is the derby something where you could bring Aimé straight in? Is that one of those games, or is it too
much? It's completely different. And the problem we had is that we didn't have another option in that moment. So Kai was injured in the first game against Madrid. John, just 20 minutes, and had Fernandinho help us a lot to play as a fullback. So it's a different situation. So if I decide, we decide to play with Aimé, not a problem, we do it. But now we don't have this urgency because we have alternative with Ruben, with Manu, with Nathan. So, but it's important, he's back, really, really important.
And do you feel a need to be kind of more aggressive in this first half of the season, given that you don't know how things are going to be after the World Cup?
And our performance? Yeah. And the way we play?
Yeah.
No, we, of course we talk in six weeks, we have the World Cup, you have the World Cup, and one injury in that period will be difficult, we risk, you know, that's why you have to be focused in every, do your life on and off the pitch. But we don't plan absolutely anything differently. So with the next game, we try to do it, because I don't know what's going to happen World Cup, nobody knows it. We talk about the days off, we have the staff, and players don't go to World Cup, when we come back, and the trainings we'll do. And after, it depends of group stage, quarterfinals, semifinals, final. The players will come back, and after that we'll see how they feel, here, legs, tired, not tired. And the first game we're going to play, Carabao Cup or Leeds away, we're going to see the selection, and step by step. I don't think it's, nobody knows what's going to happen after World Cup.
Hi Pat, there was a bit of talk earlier in the season about the size of Lisandro Martinez when he signed for United as a centre-half in the Premier League. He could be up against Erling Haaland on Sunday. How do you see that matchup going, and will he have his hands full, do you think?
Well, Erling is taller, that's for sure. But I like when the people underestimate the football player just for the size. You know, he can tell them, I'm here, I'm a good player, I can play everywhere. So he's a fantastic player, incredible build-up foot, good mentality, aggressive. And you've seen his behaviors. So if United spend this money for him, it's because Eric, of course, know him from my experience, and there's no doubt about that. So it's not the first time, I think, he played against strikers like are taller than him. In Holland, I'm pretty sure there are strikers, you know, the big ones, and he handled it. So important is intelligent, be brave, and do it. But, of course, in the box, the crosses in that position, Erling is taller. Yeah, that's right. So we'll see what happens.
That was Pep Guardiola speaking to the media a bit earlier on. How do you think he's feeling at the moment, Paul? Because it's a strange kind of game to come back to from the international break, I guess.
Yeah, but I kind of saw him. He was quite relaxed, wasn't he? I mean, I think that he's at the point that, of course, it's a derby, and I think that he wants to win it, and it's a different game. But he's quite used to play this kind of game, and he takes it like more normal than maybe another manager can do it. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think he is quite fine. Probably like the injuries that I'm sure that we're going to talk about it are going to be like his main headache. Who's going to play up front for Man United? I think, and I know that it's his biggest concern right now, because he doesn't know which player for Man United is going to be back. But yeah, I think he was quite chill, quite calm, and yeah, let's see how it goes on Sunday.
It's an interesting dynamic at the minute, Sam. How much Guardiola will be looking at what United will do, and how much it's a case of like what City can do instead. Like, just focus on City, or look at what Guardiola, look at what Ten Hag might do.
Yeah, well, he doesn't really seem the kind of manager that's just we're going to play our game, does he? It's kind of the whole overthinking debate has got its roots.
Comes from
hasn't it? Like, and, you know, whether it's like Fulham at home or United at home, he's going to make some allowances for what they do and try and exploit any weaknesses or negate any strengths. And again, as Paul's saying, you know, he's concerned about who's going to start is probably, it's not so much, oh, he's scared of them, it's just he wants to know. Yeah. He just wants to know. So we can say, okay, if it's Rashford, then we know he likes to do this. If it's Martial, he likes to do this. If it's Ronaldo, then...
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo is like a whole complete story.
We need to be careful with this, but I'd probably prefer to play against Ronaldo, I reckon.
Someone who isn't going to press them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, exactly. I think he'd prefer to, and I'm sure for that reason he probably won't. But again, it's just that kind of uncertainty. But yeah, just the whole vibe. Like, in terms of it being a big game and Guardiola being relaxed, it's like, I'm sure he probably prefers it as well, because the players don't need any motivation. He doesn't need to go in and remind them and say, look, lads, you need to switch on because it's Southampton and blah, 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 they can do this. It's like, he'll just go in and be like, look, it's Man United, they've got these players, I don't need to tell you anymore. And that, and that's, you know, that kind of takes care of itself in that respect. And then the other thing is, there was a question in there about, you know, he rushed back Walker and Stones for like the Champions League against Real Madrid, and like, is this a similar kind of occasion? But it just isn't, is it? And if you remember when the derby around this time last year, when it kind of caused a bit of controversy, didn't it? Because he was asked, like, what's more important, the Champions League group game against Leipzig or the derby? And he was like, well, it's Leipzig, isn't it? Because we've got fewer opportunities to qualify for the knockout stages. Yeah. And then obviously, when it comes to the Premier League, we've got like 30 games left. And that's the situation now, isn't it? Like, it's a big game, but also it's so early in the season.
If you're going to lose with time to recover.
Yeah,
that's the difference. I mean, while we're on it then, speaking of losing, Paul, he was asked about this as well. City's record against United at the Etihad isn't fantastic. There are mitigating circumstances for that, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to believe that, well, the record that Pep has against Solskjaer, actually. I think it's quite bad for Pep. I think it's probably the manager that has won Pep more times, which is quite unbelievable. But I think that it speaks a lot as well of the kind of United that can be dangerous to Pep, because, of course, United under Solskjaer was a really counter-attacking team, and I think that they are going to be kind of not the same, but yeah, kind of similar than that. Or, what are we going to see like on Sunday? But yeah, I think that in the past few years, probably United has been setting up in a more conservative way, like reactive way.
They'll do that again this weekend.
Yeah. They're going to do that again. But I think that, I mean, it's not good for the long term for Man United, in my opinion. But I think that it's good for them in terms of like facing a game against Man City, because it gives to them like the role of underdogs, and I think that they kind of feel comfortable with that, and they have thrived, if that's the word that you can use with Manchester United at some point in the recent years. But yeah, let's see how it goes. But I expect like Manchester United counter-attacking, plus if they don't play with Cristiano Ronaldo, if they can have some pace up front with the defence of Man City, that probably is not going to be at its peak, basically, because of the injuries that they have.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Speaking of the underdogs thing, Sam, I'd say United's two best wins this season, Liverpool and Arsenal.
Yeah, exactly.
They've barely had the ball in either of them.
Yeah,
exactly. It just suits them down to the ground. And, you know, it was after that, because obviously going into the Liverpool game, it was all kind of like, if they lose this, and it could be like 6-0, then, you know, delete club and all that kind of stuff. But then obviously when they won, you know, all the talk on, like, they had the pundits on the pitch, and I remember listening to it, and like Gary Neville was like, oh, the way they counter-attacked in this. And I was like, yeah, but that's kind of... That doesn't fix the problem, really. Obviously, you can't say no to beating Liverpool at home. You know, City would take that for sure. But in any circumstances, but it was just like that doesn't. You know, the issue is for United when they play like anyone at home who they're expected to beat. How do they actually play? And that's obviously going to be the big thing for Ten Hag. But you know, Ten Hag has kind of shown that he doesn't mind ceding possession. He's not. He's not just going to be like, well, actually, no, we're going to.
We want the ball.
We're not really going to do. Want the ball and press high up and all this kind of stuff. Blah blah blah. So yeah, and that, you know, that can give problems to City. And like I said a million times, like if City play against West Ham, they can play compact and hit on the break. You know, West Ham are okay on the break. Leicester, the best Leicester, are really good on the break. Like the way they actually combine the players they've got makes them really good. And then like you go up into the Champions League, and if you've got PSG playing on the break, it's so much harder because staying compact is horrible to play against. But then when you've got individual quality on the break, and it's similar with United. They haven't got Mbappe and Messi, but like we've seen Rashford, you know, he's got player of the month now, you know, just for kind of being able to play more on the break. Martial play more on the break. Sancho scored a good goal here last season on the break. So yeah, once you add in that kind of any kind of organisation and then individual quality, it is difficult. But I always thought this whenever Solskjaer was in charge, so despite whatever's happened before, I'm sure City will be fine and will win. I'm really looking forward to the game, but it's mainly because of, it's interesting because it's different from United again, isn't it? Like, City's interesting because, what's Guardiola going to do? And obviously now there's a Haaland factor. But the main thing is, it's a new United manager. Is this kind of weird City record going to go on? Or will they just, kind of get the results that they did last season, which were two of the most one-sided Manchester Derby victories you'll ever see? Even, I suppose, going back to when United were winning them, don't think United ever won them kind of like as, just convincingly as that.
Yeah, well, I've got the record, and like when you dig into it, there are reasons behind each of the games, and it sounds like I'm making excuses for City. Maybe I am, but you go back to Guardiola's first season. End of the first season, they drew 0-0. It was a Thursday night.
It was terrible, wasn't it?
It's an awful game. Fellaini got sent off, I think, just come back to me. But it was the end of the season. You know, City were kind of coasted into a top three, top four finish. 17-18, I didn't like that one. They were 2-0 up. United came back, won 3-2. Yeah. That was a bad beat. But the title was done and dusted. It was a matter of time. 18-19, when it mattered, and every point mattered, United came here and City controlled it, won 3-1. 19-20, City were all over the place. That was not a great game in 19-20, but it was.
I don't even remember this game.
This was the Otamendi scored late on, but United scored twice on the break in the first half, and it was the season where
I think I'll do a Marshall.
But it was the season where City
Was last season.
It was a season where City would just they weren't defending. They throw in a bad performance every four or five games. 2021, United won again, but again, City were running away with the league. It was the lockdown season. They were looking at
they'd won
Champions League
games in a row. That was a surprising thing for me.
They were looking at the stage where they were looking at the Champions League as well, though, at that point in the season.
It was like March, wasn't it?
Raheem was still in game, wasn't it?
He
missed a couple of chance
and then he didn't play against Southampton after that, and the whole thing kicked off, and now he's a Chelsea
Then last season, when every point mattered again, it was 4-1. So we're at the stage of the season where I reckon you can look at the 2021-22 and the 18-19 games for guidance for this one. And I don't know if that's just me being overly optimistic.
That's just being hopeful, isn't it? You've glossed over some fairly horrible defeats there and just wrote them off as
mitigating circumstances. That's my point.
Because in 700 point season, you're telling me City didn't want to beat United because they were going to win it at some point. Like that was the main motivation. It was like, do it today.
That's the blip, though, isn't it?
No. But that one, the season after, when it was like November 2018, I remember that just being
just a really good
City performance in the derby, and that's how I've expected them all to go at the Etihad. Obviously they haven't for different reasons. Just the one last season, but the one when they won 24 games in a row and then just lose and play terrible. It was like, where's that come from? Because obviously City they'd gone off the boil for that whole season when Liverpool won it, and then at the start, but then obviously they turned it around so spectacularly for their 24 games in a row, and they played United at Old Trafford in the Carabao, didn't they, in like January. Before they'd only won like two games, but they played well Old Trafford, and it was like, oh, City back here. And then I think they beat Chelsea at the weekend after that, and it was like, they're motoring now. And then to win 24 games and then lose to that was just weird. So that's the whole kind of interesting thing about this game. Like, I do fully expect City to win and play well, but like I say, if there's any kind of organisation and any kind of break, like individual quality on the counter attack, It is going to be fascinating. It'd be great if Ten Hag started Ronaldo. I just don't think he will.
Yeah.
For the reason where you just think you'd know what, if you start Ronaldo against City, you know. Like Rangnick didn't, and Rangnick knew he didn't really have any power by then. Like by the time they came to the Etihad, Rangnick had kind of knew the score, knew he wasn't going to be able to change anything. Obviously, he left because there's no point in even saying as an advisor. But even then, he was like, I'm not playing Ronaldo today.
Yeah.
That's where Ronaldo, he just went to Portugal, didn't he? And just like kicked off. They managed to stop that from being like a big story in the media. But.
And basically, City knew beforehand in that game that Ronaldo was not going to play. Because all the bomb that just went off, like in Manchester, just City has Portuguese players, like within like the backroom staff, they knew that Ronaldo was there. So I guess that it was easier just to plan it.
That would have been over the weekend, wouldn't it? Because I know, I put this in an article at the end of last season, that City, they called up like loads of young players to train in, like before. Like maybe it was on the Friday or like the Thursday or whenever, but it was like
kind of do a tactics.
Bring up loads of young players, and they made one of the young players like do Ronaldo's job, you know, because I think they always say like
stand
you're
in the center circle.
But it was like they said to him, press, but don't like fully press. Yeah, like don't try and actually win the ball back.
Much.
Just like make the run, but like just kind of stop. So because that was exactly what they were expecting. Like if Ronaldo plays, there's no point in getting the Ronaldo, our Ronaldo copy guy. To fully press because he's not going to do it, and that kind of gives an example of, you know, like, that's why I think, you know, Pep would love for Ronaldo to play. He'd never admit it, obviously, but he'd love for Ronaldo to play. But then I guess like you say, Paul, I hadn't thought of this, but all the Portuguese guys here, they must have known by like Friday night, Saturday or whatever.
I mean, I'm not guessing.
Yeah,
I know it. But I don't think it's going to be like a game similar like last season. I think that this United has
although I think that
United has more of a structure.
But they gave Liverpool so much of the ball at Old Trafford, where Liverpool weren't great, but they still had, basically, obviously it was at Old Trafford, it was different, but if United offer City the amount of possession this weekend that they gave Arsenal, and particularly Liverpool, because I didn't see the Arsenal game, so I was flying to Seville, but the Liverpool game, I just think City would.
You think City would absolutely get to town with
it? I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
So even if they do, they are a bit more reactive and they're compact and pound the break. I do think if you offer City that kind of possession, and obviously that there's the Haaland factor as well.
I was going to come on to
this. Put the ball in the box occasionally and it'll probably score.
Because I was going to come on to this. One of the issues in those derbies that they've lost, Paul, has been United soak everything up and hit City on the counter-attack.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to soak everything up if you've got a man who needs three touches to score two goals.
Yeah. I think it's going to play a role because it also like leaves United in a position that if you want to play in the counter-attack, that's okay. But, I mean, you don't want to sit down on your box and just get Haaland, get paired to Lisandro Martinez and just wait for a cross in there because he got such an advantage in there. So
it's a matter of time if you do that.
Yeah. So United is in this kind of position that, I mean, it makes sense for them just to wait on the counter attack, but they cannot just sit down on their box because
in terms of crosses, though, like how this is why Cancelo gets so much space because if you like a deep block, then you're kind of in your box, and Cancelo's in that kind of withdrawn half space.
Yeah.
And also, De Bruyne is so good at finding those spaces on the right as well.
Yeah.
So if it's about crossing, then they can, like United could, like most teams could say, okay, you can cross from there, but we've got this advantage in the middle. But they haven't really got that advantage. Look, with Martinez and smaller players, like there are certain things you can do.
Yeah.
But if it does become City putting in 30 crosses, which obviously nobody really likes, and it's normally a sign that things are going badly. But normally, if they do put those in, like good crosses, like the Cancelo one against Dortmund, or like a lot of De Bruyne's ones where they reach the back post, it's going to cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah. Then it might be good as well to have the game that City had against Borussia Dortmund, because Pep was like really, really critical on the work that both attacking midfielders did when he tried to defend Jack Grealish. Like, yeah, Grealish didn't have a good game because Gundogan and De Bruyne didn't run into the spaces and create all those situations that he needed to. I mean, if United wants to sit deep, the attacking midfielders are going to be they are going to have to read the spaces and just to know in which line they have to position themselves. So probably just to have this game when they were like rock bottom, if you want to say that, or they were like bad, it's going to be a good moment to learn from for Pep, and just to tell them, look, you did this and this wrong against Borussia Dortmund. We cannot afford to do that against Man United now.
There was a similar thing in the documentary that City put out on City TV recently, I can't remember when it was, but Guardiola was like, do you remember, like, last year? He was like, no. 6 months ago? No. He goes, last week? Like, it was just like, it was really last week. It was last week that you had this crap game when you did what you're not supposed to do. Don't do that. And it was kind of like trying to like add in that humour, like, oh yeah, it was ages ago. No, it wasn't. It was like dead recent. So like, yeah, like Paul says, with that Dortmund example, it's like, well, do you remember what you did 2 weeks ago? Don't do that.
Don't do that, yeah. What do you think he does in terms of selection up top? Because there are questions over who he can pick. Obviously, you go in Haaland in the middle. Grealish played well against Wolves and has been in a rich vein of form. Mahrez equally hasn't been in a rich vein of form. You kind of feel like you want to get Gundogan and Bernardo in there as well, but with De Bruyne and Rodri to get in, there's not enough spaces for those people.
No, but I think that's that there's true. A chance. I think that there's a chance because on big games, if there's one thing that Pep likes, just to, I mean, Pep doesn't have enough midfielders in the team.
Is this when he drops Haaland?
Nah.
Can you imagine? Imagine.
But I think that Bernardo could perform as a right wing.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
thinking.
And then just put Phil
Foden on the left. No, sorry, Foden on the right. Because Mahrez, there's no point in putting
Mahrez. Yeah, I think.
Foden on the right, Grealish on the left, and then Haaland in the middle. But then, yeah, you'd want Bernardo and Gundogan in this game, I think. So.
I think Grealish and Gundogan is like the doubt here.
Yeah.
One of them is going to play.
My feeling, I mean, I'm not picking the team, but my feeling would be Bernardo on the right, Foden on the left, Gundogan alongside De Bruyne.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. I'm not blaming you for thinking that because I think it's quite plausible.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
In terms of the defence, Sam, we heard from Guardiola that Stones is a few weeks away. Walker played for England, came off the bench and played for England. He was on the bench, I think, for Wolves, for City as well, so he's there or thereabouts. How do you see it going? It's Akanji and Diaz, isn't it?
Yeah, got to be. I mean, I was just thinking, actually, during the press conference, poor old Nathan Ake. Waited so long to kind of get a chance, and obviously he was injured at the end of last season, but whenever he did play well, came in and did really
well.
He's
done really
well,
yeah.
But now it's like, that's fine, but like Akanji's come in and he looks better, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like, just more impressive. I don't know what it is about that. I don't know why. Maybe it's because Ake didn't start brilliantly, so everyone's got that doubt in their minds, you know, some kind of twinge of negativity, which isn't necessarily his fault. And no reflection of how he's played recently. But obviously Akanji's come in, he's done well straight away. All of a sudden everyone's like, didn't know what to expect from this guy, but he's brilliant. Whereas with Ake, it's like, okay, yeah, he's going to be okay. And then, oh, he's not great, and blah, blah, blah. And he's kind of fighting against a narrative in that sense. But it's going to have to be Akanji and Diaz, isn't it? Yeah. And I'm fine with that. I mean, both very aggressive. Both very aggressive. Yeah. I wonder how that would work.
Akanji probably is quicker. I think that Akanji is quicker when he has to run back.
Yeah,
I think he is. And I think that there was an interesting point in the presser. I think it was in the same question where Pep was asked about Stones and Walker last season being rushed against Real Madrid, and he said that he had no more option than doing that. Now, when he was speaking about fullbacks and centre backs, he mentioned, I think, that Nathan Ake as an option before than Sergio Gomez. I think that he didn't even mention.
No, he didn't mention.
He didn't even mention Sergio Gomez. So I think that if somehow there was a problem in the right back or in the full back, or Walker cannot play, I don't know, to be honest, I think that he would put Cancelo on the right back and just Nathan Ake on the left back.
Yeah.
So that could be an option if Kyle Walker is not fit enough.
If Stones was fit though, would he put Stones at right back instead?
Yeah, as he did in the previous weeks, to be fair, and Stones did well. But I think that if Walker cannot play, I don't know which is his state, but if Walker cannot play, I think that Nathan Ake has a chance to play as left back and then do like a back three on the build up and just put Cancelo next to Rodri.
Well, it's not what he signed up for at all. I suppose it is what he signed up for, but when somebody else gets signed like a Kanji as well, you just must think, sod this. Like, if he carries on like this, you'd think by next summer, Akka will be like, I'm off now. But, you know, he might end up playing loads because of injuries or whatever. But, yeah, it's not. It must be annoying at the minute.
Yeah. Another name, it didn't get mentioned in the presser, wondered what role he might have, Paul, is Julian Alvarez. Now, it would be a very bold call to start him in this game, but you would imagine if City are having one of those games where the energy's not quite right or Guardiola wants a bit more impetus, he could be a real option from the bench.
Yeah, yeah, plus with just getting back again to the Borussia Dortmund game, but if Pep is not happy with how the work is with the attacking midfielders, I think that Julian Alvarez provides like an option just to play with two strikers. Kevin De Bruyne just go a bit wider and just start crossing Julian and Haaland like in the box, getting balls in there. I think it's like another way just to get balls where they want to bring the ball, basically. But yeah, I think it would be a bold call just to start him. And I don't think that he's really going to do it. I think my guess is that he's going to be like a sub. And yeah, as Pep says, he sees Julian like as a striker, and it would surprise me as well if he plays him in the wing. I don't think that's an option.
Sam, just on kind of this game and United. United haven't played a Premier League game in, well, it's about a month now because of the Queen's death. Calling off that round of fixtures, and then the funeral, the game with Leeds was called off.
Yeah, good point.
The only competitive games they've had has been in the Europa League. One of them was, I think they lost to Sociedad, and then they played Sheriff, which is, I mean, not the greatest of tests. They could be coming into this quite rusty.
Yeah, there's a decent chance, actually. I mean, look, after the international break, it's a bit of a leveller for everyone. But, yeah, like if you're a new team trying to work out like kinks in the system, which obviously City don't really have at this point, certainly not compared to United. It's not going to be ideal not actually having played that much and not having actually played in the Premier League and then the tests you do get.
And City can kind of rely on muscle memory, though. Like they know the motions that Guardiola wants them to do, and that kind of that's the first step of the way in when you come back.
Yeah, although you know this is probably semi-related. Again, going back to that documentary, one of the things that struck me about the first few episodes, maybe, was how often Guardiola had to say to them to want the ball, or like in the bad moments, want the ball. And like when they played at Anfield, it was like, hey, you need to have the ball, and some players hide. It was just mad that he had to seem to remind them so often. You just think, surely by now, that's the one thing they do.
Yeah.
That's like the absolute basic. But it was mad how often he has to remind them. But I guess that's just kind of the whole intensity thing, isn't it? Like, what they didn't really show was the players' faces, which is probably,
You've told us inside.
You've told us literally a million times.
Stop going on about it. God.
We know. But,
all right, Dad.
But yeah, exactly. But they do. Like, look, they don't know 100% exactly what they have to do because they do. But it's just whether they do it. But yeah, compared to United and the stage that they're at, it's completely different. And again, we talked about Liverpool and Arsenal, and even those two games in between. You know, when I said they need to play teams they're expected to beat, I mean, they did with those kind of fairly bad games against Southampton and Leicester. But then you do remember when they played Real Sociedad, a good side, it's got beat. And then the Sheriff game, no test at all, really. So they will be rusty. They're nowhere near it, the evolution of where they should be. And again, that's why it goes back to, for me, City should win, but you just never know.
You never know what's going to happen. Paul, it turns out you don't really need to play any Premier League games to win Manager of the Month, though.
Exactly. That's an easy one.
How many games did they actually play for Ten Hag to get that?
Two, I think.
Two?
Yeah.
And what was one was Arsenal?
I think the other one was Southampton.
Probably Leicester, I think, because Southampton was first. Yeah. Leicester probably. Really? It was like Leicester was like a Thursday night. So that was probably
It wasn't Leicester.
That was the 1st of September, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the 1st of September. So it would have been that, I think.
Okay.
And then the Arsenal game was just like the 6th or whatever. I don't know.
Let's finish.
That one made the edit.
Well, you never know. Let's finish by talking about Erling Haaland, as is the way. Quotes this week, Paul, from Alfie Haaland, who said, I think Erling wants to test out his capabilities in every league. Then he can stay in every league for 3 to 4 years maximum. He could have 2.5 years in Germany, 2.5 in England, and then in Spain, Italy, France, right? We do not know if it will be like that, but I think he would like to test his abilities in the big leagues. there's no reason to be worried about that sort of quote from his father, is there?
Not yet, I guess.
I thought he was taking the piss.
Really?
That's how I read it.
Okay. Maybe.
Like 2.5, I mean 2.5 years.
It's nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
But 2.5, no, Haaland's not going anywhere in January of any year. Surely. No. I thought he was taking the piss. I really want to see this documentary, though. Like, it's a documentary on him making the decision, isn't it? I had a brief search for it yesterday. It was made by Viaplay in Norway, so hopefully we'll be able to get it. I'm sure we will at some point. But I thought he was just kind of joking with that. Look, there is the element of Real Madrid at some point. That spectre is always going to be there. But in terms of this, I just thought it was a bit of a joke. But also, it just goes back to... Didn't it go back? There was another quote as well that could be like, oh yeah, there's Bayern Munich who are on the same kind of tier as Real Madrid, and then there's other English clubs like Liverpool and Chelsea, whatever. But I think that was, again, if you were talking about things maybe being taken out of context, I think that was before we kind of made the decision. I think this was like, these are the clubs we could think about now. Not necessarily play for in the future. So yeah, I think with those, I know there was an article in the Times which I haven't actually read and should, but I'm sure that will get the context right. But I'm sure, like most people listening to this, like me, I've seen those quotes just on the aggregators, and as we know, context doesn't always come across brilliantly. Yeah. So, I mean, look, the spectre of Haaland going or being linked to other teams is going to be there soon.
When
the Spanish press are concerned, for example, it could be next summer. Like, you can't just get used to it. Yeah. And that is a problem. But in terms of these quotes, I think it's... Yeah, I just think it's good. The context was, this was talking about when they were deciding, not now. Now that they're settled in, I don't think you're going to have Haaland or his dad giving interviews now talking about
when he's leaving next City.
And to be fair, though, if you do start to get them soon, like if Alfie Haaland does an interview during the World Cup and he starts saying, oh, Real Madrid does this, start worrying. But this was months ago, so I think okay.
I'm also, because the other kind of aspect of all of this, Paul, is people got really nervous about the presence of a release clause in his contract, and like I'm quite relaxed about it, just on the simple basis that City as a club have consistently done this thing where they've said, all right, you want to leave, well, bring us this offer. It's just that in writing, isn't it?
It doesn't really change anything. It's like probably with Bernardo Silva when City tried to extend his contract last season. If City would have extended Bernardo Silva's contract, it wouldn't change the fact that if Bernardo wants to leave and, let's say, Barcelona brings like an £85 million offer, City's not going to say no, because City, of course, that's the way they operate, and that's the way they have convinced Haaland to join and several other players to join. And what made them like a successfully run club. So yeah, it just basically just put that into writing. And at the end of the day, of course, if Haaland leaves, it's going to be painful, and it's going to be. But you're going to have a good business done. And yeah, just basically, it's just how football works. Just like putting pen to paper, just the way football works.
Yeah. Also, the key thing is the amount.
Yeah.
Because if it's like 150 million, there might not be a lot of clubs who can stretch to it.
Yeah.
But then if it starts coming down, then it becomes more of a problem. Yeah, like if it becomes 100 million and you've got a few teams in Europe going, oh yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, fancy
then
that.
It
yeah.
becomes an issue. But if it's like 175 million or something, then it's going to be difficult anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It's Magic Beans territory, isn't it?
Yeah. But look, I'm sure, they know what they're doing in Haaland's camp with the whole transfer. They weren't going to price themselves out of a move.
Yeah.
But you'd like to think City wouldn't have agreed to anything too low, but they may have in order to get
him here in the first
place. And then
place.
Just be like, well, we can renegotiate with Aguero and Pep and just keep him forever, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see it being a situation, Paul, where Haaland could remain beyond the length of the contract he's signed?
Maybe it's difficult right now, because, I mean, it's...
So it's a long way off, I know.
Yeah. It's just such a long shot. But, yeah, with... I don't know, maybe with the speculation that is coming out from Spain, I mean, it's going to be like that every single summer.
Yeah.
And just get ready
get
for that.
Get used to it, yeah.
Yeah, get ready for that.
Yeah, Real Madrid are going to want him.
Yeah. Really bad, really bad. Plus with Mbappe, with what happened with Mbappe, they just won one of those. So, with all that, this amount of pressure, I mean, it's maybe now looks hard to keep him for so many years, but you never know. I mean, look at David Silva when he came here, he didn't think about like staying here 10 years and he ended up living up to it. So
in the end, 10 years was something he really wanted to do, wasn't it? He signed contracts to be like, that'll be 10 years, and then it actually became a big thing.
Yeah.
And like, to be fair, in terms of what Haaland said, talking about quotes and stuff, And when he was asked about it early on, he was like, well, I signed the contract for 5 years, so let's start there. And I know that's kind of what you would say when you first turn up, but it's hard because I'm trying to work out what he is like as a character. And part of me thinks, well, you can tell he just loves being at City. Now, the way he celebrates the goals, the way he speaks, like, obviously grew up supporting the club. So, yeah, I could easily see him staying here for that long. But the other time, on the other hand, really, he's just kind of such a maverick character, isn't he? Like, if he just said, like, I can imagine him just sitting down and even like saying to City, and like even the fans, because he's just kind of so upfront and honest and stuff. Yeah. If he's like, yeah, sorry, I want to go Real Madrid, and they should respect my way. I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if that was the kind of character he had, and he was like, I want to do this before I retire, so I'm going to go now.
Yeah,
I just like it. Both of those elements of his personality, as far as I can tell, are true.
Yeah.
So it'll just be interesting to see. But again, if you do stay here for 5 years and you love it at City and you're winning loads of stuff and you're winning the Champions League all the time,
you feel all right, don't
but
you?
Again, you feel all right and you might want to carry on. Or like Bernardo knows, like you say, Bernardo knows this is the best place for him, but he still wants to go and live in Spain because he wants to go and live in Spain.
Yeah.
And that might be the same with Haaland. He might know this is the best place, but Christ, he wants to go and play in the Bernabeu.
Yeah.
Who knows?
What's the kebab pizzas like in Spain? The kebab pizzas. That was Haaland's favourite food.
Oh, yeah, the kebab pizza. I mean, it's not a big thing in Spain, if I have to be honest. Yeah. I mean, kebab is like hitting big right now, well, in the last years, but I wouldn't say that kebab pizza is such a thing in Spain.
Not really a thing.
Yeah.
There's a gap in the market.
Yeah.
They'd love it. I've just made loads of little ones.
Right, well, that brings us to the end of this week's Wire With Us. Thank you to Sam Lee.
Thank you very much.
And Paul Byers.
It's been a pleasure.
Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now for £1 a month. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.